I mean, the way I used to feel dread and despair before Raptors game sevens, I feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah.
You know, they're maniacs, man. And they're like a video game villain that you can't kill. Like they just will not go down. And I feel very good about the pedigree of this team going into a game seven. And I also feel pretty good because you just got one of the worst offensive games from Pascal Siakam in a series full of them. I'll add.
Yeah, like that's like, the impressive part.
Yeah, this is one of the worst performances offensively from Pascal Siakam I think I've ever seen. He was really bad out there. At times, it was like back when Bismack Biyombo was on the Raptors and would take those weird 18-footers and the no, oh yeah kind of thing. That was like when he hit that mid-ranger in overtime. I was just like, Pascal shouldn't be shooting anything right now, but he did, and he missed all of his shots. He was 5 of 19. It was bad, and they still managed to win with him having such a poor offensive performance. And yes, there was some hot shooting in this game. They shot 40% from three. They were 19 of 47. That's very good and hard to sustain. But I just feel like the Celtics, A, must be really kicking themselves for not putting this thing away. And I think the Raptors are just like this impossible beast to slay. And I feel quite good about the Raptors at least putting their best foot forward. I don't think we're going to see a blowout either way. I think it'll be insanely close, another nerve-wracking scream into pillows type of game. But I feel relatively good.
Via Uber Conference, it's the new play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Kraken. Please welcome Everett Fitzhugh. Everett, how you doing?
Hey, Trey, I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just want to first congratulate you. You are the first Black hockey play-by-play announcer ever. And what does that mean to you, like, when you hear that you're the first to ever do something? Because only a handful of people can say that.
Yeah, man. I think obviously it's special. You know, it's something that I've always told people throughout this whole process. I don't think anyone really ever sets out to be that first, but it's something that if you have an opportunity to be the first or to be, you know, the trailblazer or whatever that word may be, I think you owe it to yourself. I think you owe it to the culture, to the sport, you know, to help educate and to help do your part to continue to bring other people up. And you know, I've been a hockey fan my whole life, and I've known since I was 18 years old in college that I wanted to be in the National Hockey League, that I wanted to be a broadcaster in the NHL. So to be able to get to this point, you know, at such a young age, I think is a huge accomplishment, you know, personally for myself. But, you know, it's something that I'm really excited to be able to do this. And, you know, I know that I didn't have a lot of Black influences in hockey growing up. So for me to be able to be the first, it's something that, like I said, I don't think you ever intend, but it's also a very special opportunity.
Right. So I read online saying that you took inspiration from two players during an Edmonton Oilers and a Detroit Red Wings game, that you saw two Black players playing on the rink and that got you into hockey. Can you elaborate on that more? And I heard that you also told your mother, like, hey, look, Mom, there's finally two Black players who look like me who are playing. So, like, can you tell us more about that story and what happened?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. You know, when I was in third grade, a lot of my classmates, they were hockey fans. A lot of them played hockey. So for me, I mean, anytime you're 8, 9 years old, you want to fit in, right? You know, so I went home and I watched a Red Wings game. And I'd always been a Wings fan just growing up in Detroit, you know. And when I was born, or when I was coming up, rather, it was right around the time the Red Wings were winning, you know, those back-to-back Stanley Cups. And they were in the process of that great playoff rivalry with Colorado. So for me, being a hockey fan, you know, was kind of an easy path just being from where I was, but you still didn't see a lot of black people in hockey. So I went home one night and I watched a Red Wings game so I could learn more about the sport. And I did see Mike Greer and George the Rock playing for the Oilers. And You know, I started running through the house. I was like, Mom, there's two black guys on the Oilers. And that was really inspirational and really cool for me to see. You know, because like I said, I didn't have a whole lot of influences, black influences, in hockey as a kid. So that was really special. It let me know that there is a place for me in this game, and that hockey is truly for everyone, you know, like the NHL says. So a couple of years later, Ansett Carter joins the Edmonton Oilers. So you had three black players on the same team. So for me, that was it. I was on the Edmonton Oilers bandwagon, and I was a hockey fan for life. So that's where my hockey fandom started.
So you're talking about your hockey fandom. Did you ever have any aspirations to maybe play? Have you ever played, like, laced up the skates or given it a go at it? Like, anything you want to share about that?
You know, so I've never played hockey, actually. You know, mom thought it was a little bit too dangerous growing up, so I didn't play hockey. I played baseball, though, when I was a kid. And actually, I didn't even learn how to skate until I was in college. It was my fifth year, my last year in college, I learned how to skate. I took an ice skating class. So that was, you know, that was pretty fun. But also, I played one game of men's league hockey when I was in college. So I was like Bambi out there on the ice. I kept going from blue line to blue line. But I did win 7 faceoffs that game. I was the faceoff master for that game. So that's the extent of my hockey career growing up.
We've got more of Trey's conversation with Everett Fitzhugh, the new voice of the Seattle Kraken. But right now, let's talk about rockauto.com. Because basically, there are a million different kinds of cars. Everything is different and new and confusing. And for stores, it's impossible to stock all of the different things that you could need that would ever fit any car that ever existed. So why bother going from door to door, having to go from chain store to big box store to dealership whenever you're looking for a part when you could just go online? Go get online, open up rockauto.com, and you can easily find all the parts that you could ever possibly need for your own car or your truck. The catalog makes it super easy to find what you need. It's very easy to navigate and it's super fast. All you do is you just look for your specific car and then boom, list of parts. The prices are always reliably low and you know that you're going to pay the same price whether you're a professional or you're a do-it-yourselfer. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your own personal vehicle. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
See, you and I have a lot in common, more than we think, because I'm actually a college baseball player at Adrian College. And, you know, now I'm doing hockey. Now I'm like focused on doing play-by-play hockey. And, you know, we both grew up in Detroit. So there's another thing we have in common, Everett, which is, you know, we're two baseball players, or, you know, you played baseball, you said, growing up. Now you're in hockey. And now here we are talking about our similar past. So we first met over the summer over a tweet that I sent out about sharing my story, my experience, because I was only doing it for a few months at the time, but I still felt like I had a story to share. So let's go back to, I believe, June. Like, what was your reaction when you saw my story as a black hockey announcer and saying, like, did I just inspire someone for the first time? Like, what was the mindset when you saw my tweet?
I was really happy, man. You know, for me, like I said, I never had those influences growing up. And for me, you know, for you to say that about me, it was something that was very humbling. And you know, I never intended to be the first, and you never intend to be that inspiration, like I said earlier, but it's something that I think if you can inspire people, I think you owe it to the culture to take that head on. And, you know, when I read your story, I was just so excited. I was so happy that there was another black person who wanted to get into hockey play by play and who wanted to be in the hockey media world. And, you know, I've always said that, I hope I'm not, and I better not be the only. I better not be the first for a long time. And, you know, there better be somebody, you know, right behind me clicking on my heels that I haven't met yet, or even like a guy like yourself, someone that I do know, you know, that is trying to carve their own path and is trying to get to an NHL press box as well. So when I read your story, man, I was inspired myself, because someone who, you know, you even admitted you didn't have the hockey knowledge, you weren't the biggest hockey fan, but you took it upon yourself to learn the game and you were passionate about doing it. So that's what I thought was really, really cool about your story, and about learning more about you.
Right. And I appreciate that. And, you know, the reason, you know, I have to tell the truth and just come clean and say, like, I didn't know hockey at first, because the way I see it, I don't know who would actually go this great lengths, but if you get that one crazy person who might try to go back onto like my broadcast and just say like, he lied, he didn't actually know anything about hockey. He wasn't a fan. Like, you know, the way I see it is like, sometimes you just got to be vulnerable with yourself and just, you know, come clean and just that. And that's what I want to inspire to people. Just like, you know, you got to be 100% honest. Otherwise the media will expose you, because the media can either be your best friend or your worst nightmare. Have you ever experienced something like that where, you know, maybe the media was trying to like, you know, bring you down or something like that, or just say like, you know, put you to the side? Like, and do you have any words of wisdom?
You know, I think for me, I haven't personally been put in that situation. Now, as you know, as a PR director for a couple of teams, I mean, I've dealt with my fair share of media crises, that's for sure. But, you know, personally, you know, I haven't ever experienced anything like that, because of what you said. You know, you work hard and you're honest about it. And I think for me, you know, my career has taken me to a lot of great places, and my career has taken me, you know, down a path that I wouldn't trade for the world. It's been a long path. There have been, you know, a few stops on the way, and I've had a blast everywhere that I've been. But everywhere that I've gone is always been about trying to get better. You know, when I was in college and I started broadcasting at Bowling Green, it was great. And I thought this was the life. I thought that I was going to show up every day forever and call games. But it wasn't until I started looking for jobs that I realized everything else that goes into being a broadcaster. You know, when I was in Cincinnati, broadcasting was really 20% of my job. There's PR, there's marketing, there's the social media side of it, there is the team services side of it. I was in charge of doing all of our travel and planning the hotels, the buses, and the schedules and things like that. So there is so much that goes into this job. You know, I remember when I was graduating college, I was applying for a radio position with a team out in California. And it was between myself and another guy, and both of us really talented broadcasters, and the other guy got the job. He's actually still with that team today. And the reason why was because, you know, he had at the time the PR experience. He knew how to run a website. He knew how to put together game notes and write a press release and things like that. In college, I'd always had sports information directors to do that for me. So being able to learn everything that you need in order to do this job, I think, was huge. So, I mean, I think that's the lesson that I would impart on people who are trying to get into this industry. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough, but you're going to have a lot of fun. And also, too, it's okay in some circumstances to not be okay. There have been so many times, you know, when you're loading bags at 3 a.m. in Kalamazoo on a Sunday in February, where you're just saying, man, do I really want to keep doing this? You know, every year, everybody seems to have those dog days, if you will, where, you know, maybe you start to put things in perspective, but you remember the struggles, and you remember the path that you've been on, and your journey, and the sacrifices that you've made. And it's something where you say to yourself, you know what, this is all going to be worth it. This is all going to pay off in the end. So I think those are the two biggest pieces of advice that I would give is like you said, make sure you're honest, but make sure you're learning and you're doing everything you can to put yourself in a position to succeed. And also, it's all right to have those down days. It's all right to second guess yourself as long as you realize that the journey that you're on, the path and the sacrifices that you've made up to this point are all going to be worth it.
Evan Fitzhugh joining me on Locked On Devils, the play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Kraken. You just spoke about the hats you had to wear and the amount of hard work you had to do to get to where you're at. And that's what a lot of people don't seem to realize. They think you were just an announcer that you worked your way up, but there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that people didn't know. And that's one of the things I always talk about. If you want to be successful, it takes way more than just wanting it. You got to put in the work, you got to put in the time, you got to put in the effort and the patience as well to get to where you're at. And you're a great example because the stuff you said, I didn't even know about. Like I knew you were a PR director, but I didn't know you did like some of the other stuff that you mentioned. So that's just great advice to have to a person just saying like, you know, if you want to be successful, that's fine, but it takes way more than just wanting it. And let's go backwards a little bit. Let's talk about high school and what led to Bowling Green State University. So where'd you go to high school in Ann Arbor again?
Yeah, I went to Ann Arbor Pioneer High School.
All right. So did you do broadcast for their high school team? Did they have a hockey team? So like what was the story of you in high school and hockey?
You know, I didn't. They had a hockey team. So I went to a couple of games for the hockey team just as a fan and, you know, as school pride. But also in Ann Arbor, we had at the time the National Team Development Program, which was where the top 17 and 18-year-old players in America play their junior hockey. So those kids went to my school as well. So I was able to talk to a few of those guys and actually a couple of guys who made the NHL, Jamie McBain, who spent some time in Carolina and Buffalo. Him and I were pretty good friends. Mike Ratchuk, who had a cup of coffee in the NHL with the Flyers and has been in the minors and has been over Europe as well. Him and I were classmates together too. So I didn't broadcast in high school. And actually what took me to Bowling Green is that I knew that growing up, I knew that I wanted a career in sports. I knew that I wanted to work in sports and that it would be something that I would enjoy to do, but I didn't necessarily know what that was and what I wanted to do. I honestly didn't even know that play-by-play was an option. I thought I was going to be Stuart Scott, you know, on the ESPN Sports Center desk. And that was something that I really wanted to do as a kid. But, you know, I chose Bowling Green because having that passion for sports and knowing that I wanted to work in sports, I wanted to go to a school that had all four sports at the Division I level. So Bowling Green, baseball, hockey, basketball, and football, I had plenty of options to pursue a career in sports. I'd applied for a few other schools in Michigan and you know, regionally, but when I started narrowing down my list and started to reevaluate, Bowling Green kept coming up, and I think it was the perfect decision for me. Again, like I said, not only because they had all four sports, but they were a Division I school. It was close enough to home where I could get home if I needed to. I wasn't too far away. But also I got that feeling of being on my own. I could be an adult, make my own friends and not have to worry about running into mom at the mall every other weekend. So that went into it as well. And also, you know, Bowling Green, it was an opportunity and this was unbeknownst to me at the time, but having gone through it and you know, knowing what I do now, Bowling Green was a great place for opportunities because it was so small. It was a Division I school that there were plenty of volunteer positions for the athletic department. There was a lot of student involvement with the Bowling Green Radio Sports Organization, which is where I got introduced to broadcasting in the first place. So you go to Michigan and Michigan State and Notre Dame and all these big schools, they outsource a lot of the broadcasting and, you know, there's a wait list to do these things. But for me, there were opportunities from my freshman year to be a broadcaster at Bowling Green. So I didn't know that going in, but I made the perfect decision because it gave me all the reps. It gave me all the opportunity that I needed in order to establish myself and pursue a career in sports.
We've got more of Trey's conversation with Everett Fitzhugh coming up next, but take a quick break to go make sure you're following these guys on social media. Trey is available at TreyMatt4, that's TreyMatt, and the number 4. Everett Fitzhugh is available on Twitter at TheVoiceFitz, that's TheVoice, F-I-T-Z. So go look them up on Twitter, give them a follow, keep up to date with what's going on with both Trey and Everett.
See, I didn't know Bowling Green State University offered that to their students because one of the things I like about my college, Adrian College, is that it gives students the opportunities to do things that you couldn't do at a major school like Michigan or Michigan State. So, like, I work for ACTV, and, you know, doing all this is just, like, I couldn't do this at a big school. I couldn't even do this at the University of Detroit Mercy because I worked there as a ball boy for like 7 years. At 1 year, they had Dan Dickerson, who's the play-by-play announcer for Detroit Tigers Radio.
Yeah.
He did the play-by-play for their basketball game. So it goes to show you the seriousness of you know, how they take their broadcasts. They hire professionals, like, you know, guys who have past experience. Matt Derry, who's also a part of the Locked On podcast network. He does Locked On Lions. He did play-by-play for UDM, Eastern Michigan University as well. So goes to show you that, you know, at my school, like Adrian College, it gives people the opportunity to do what I'm doing because it allows me to make mistakes and, you know, to just experiment and just try new things. Because I'll admit and I'll be honest with myself, after my first broadcast, if I was to do that at like a big school, even at Bowling Green State University that does allow their students to do this, they'd probably be like to me, you're not announcing again. You're done.
You know, I was in the same boat, man. I look back on some of my old tapes and some of my old games, and I asked myself, I'm like, man, how the heck did I trick you guys into letting me keep this job? But, you know, that's the thing. You know, schools and organizations, they realize and they understand the importance of teaching students and wanting to grow and wanting their students to learn. And for me, you know, it's like I said, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to not be your best as long as you're continuing to try and you're continuing to get better. And I did some high school hockey play-by-play. I've since burned those tapes, but I used that high school hockey play-by-play tape to become the broadcaster for Bowling Green, the full-time play-by-play announcer for Bowling Green my senior year. So, you know, were there other candidates out there? Were there better candidates out there? I'm sure there were, but they put a value and a premium on students learning the craft and you know, doing and learning by doing. And I think that is what was so huge for me at BG.
Yeah, we at Adrian College Television have my first broadcast buried 50 feet deep in the ocean somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
we know what? That was an awful game, and I'll admit it. But, you know, it's not where you start, it's how you finish. And I think you and I are good examples of it, just like, or any broadcaster in general. No announcer gets it 100% correct. Yeah. The only way that can happen is maybe in a video game. Because I remember watching the Flyers and the Blackhawks, I believe it was Game 7, Patrick Kane scores the game-winning goal for the Blackhawks to win the Stanley Cup, and Doc Emrick made a mistake. It wasn't just a call, it was a history call, because he didn't see the puck, and, you know, he thought that it ricocheted off the post, and, you know, he was continuing the play, and then he saw the celebration and was like, oh no, they score, like, you know. And, you know, I sent it to my group chat for Adrian College Television because I was watching
the replay of the game on NHL television, and I was like, hey, even legends make mistakes. Here's Doc Emmerich's mistake.
Yeah, and I've made so many mistakes, man. You know, and here in Cincinnati, the our staff never misses an opportunity to joke on one another. You know, we are a very close staff, and you know, these are going to be my friends for life. But we hold each other accountable. You know, we're all brothers on the road. So you know, it's one of those things where like, man, Everett, you really messed up that one today, did you? I'm like, yeah, I wasn't too proud of that one. So you know, but and it's funny you say that too, because you know, during this whole process, I've been very, very fortunate to speak to a lot of broadcasters and folks who've reached out to me. And Doc Emmerich was one of them. And he was telling me stories about how, you know, even now after, you know, however many years, 30, 40 some odd years of broadcasting for Doc Emmerich on the sports biggest stage, he says, I still make mistakes. You know, I still have gotten a few calls right or wrong, and it's okay. You know, like you said, no one's perfect. And, this game moves so fast that, you know, you're expected to make a couple of mistakes here or there. And, you know, as long as the good far outweighs the bad, you're going to be okay.
Right. And, you know, we do the same thing at ACTV, which is, you know, you really dropped the ball on that one, or here's where you made a mistake and here's how you can improve it. But, you know, it happens. It's life. It's all love at the end. And, what goes around comes around when we make fun of each other. But anyway, yeah. I want to touch on just a couple more things. So talk about your I'm not sure if we've touched on this or not already, but talk about your time for Cincinnati in terms of a play-by-play announcer. So like what are some of your greatest memories with them? How did you get the job in the first place? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, no, Cincinnati was great, man. This was you know, without Cincinnati, I this opportunity, I think, doesn't happen. And I can say that about a lot of places. I mean, Bowling Green, obviously, is one. And, you know, Cincinnati, really, this was the first time that I got experience, consistent experience on a larger scale with working in a major market, working in PR, working in broadcasting. So all of the skills that I've learned here, I think, really helped me directly when it came to getting the job in Seattle. And, you know, the last 5 years have been fantastic, and the fan base here is passionate. For those people who don't know a lot about Cincinnati, you know, we're a major league sports town. There's the Bengals of the NFL who play right down the street from us. The oldest baseball team in the majors, the Cincinnati Reds, are literally right next door. You can throw a baseball into the stadium from our front door of the arena. You've got a brand new MLS team. You've got two Division I basketball schools in the University of Cincinnati and Xavier. You've got Louisville in Kentucky right down the road, basketball and football, Ohio State a couple hours up the road, and then high school football is king here. So, you know, there is a lot of noise and a lot of options in terms of athletics here in this area. So to be able to keep the Cyclones from a PR standpoint at the forefront was one of my biggest accomplishments here, and making folks listen and care about the Cyclones is something that I really enjoyed doing. From a broadcasting perspective, it was a lot of fun because, you know, it's pro hockey. And even though it's the ECHL and it's minor league hockey, you're still a professional broadcaster. And that was always the goal, to get the pros, to get to the NHL. And in order to get to the NHL, you got to start somewhere. So being able to be in the professional, you know, leagues, in the minor leagues, and do this was a lot of fun. As far as my memories go, I mean, anytime you have a big crowd in the building is unbelievable. And like I said earlier, you know, broadcasting was 20% of my job. I did a lot of PR, a lot of marketing, you know, social media and all that stuff. So I had just as much of a hand in, you know, the promotion of events and marketing of events as anyone else did. So when we're doing specialty theme nights, throwback nights, when we're doing Disney and Marvel nights, and we're packing 10,000 fans into the building, we did a 16,000 fan game my first year here. And that was so cool to be a part of. Every year we do a teddy bear toss in which, you know, we are routinely averaging 12, 13,000 fans in the building. And to be able to be a part of events like that, you know, you just feed off that energy. And some of the best broadcasts I've ever had in my entire life have come, you know, win or lose, in front of some of those big games here in Cincinnati. So I think for me, that's what I'm going to remember most about the Cyclones and my time here, is all of the things I learned, all of the hats I had to wear. And, you know, you'll be here soon one day, Trey. You know, you're going to be in the ECHL and the AHL and working your way up also. And, you know, you're going to have to wear 15 different hats. Sometimes you're going to have to wear 15 different hats in a day. But I guarantee you it's going to be a lot of fun. And I had a lot of fun here. And, you know, people have asked me, you know, what's my favorite memory? There's way too many to put down just one. But I just think the overall experience that I had here and learning, that is what I'm going to miss most about Cincinnati and the Cyclones.
I appreciate the support. I do hope to get there like sometime after college. But my question is, how did you get the job out of Bowling Green State University? Did you like apply? Did you send in tape? Like what was the story?
So actually, I got the job here in Cincinnati after I was in Youngstown. So once I left college at Bowling Green, I sent out tapes and applications and resumes everywhere, but no one was hiring at the time. So I actually got out of sports for about 6 months. And then a friend of mine told me about an opportunity in Chicago with the United States Hockey League, the USHL, which is the top junior league in the country. So I worked for their league office, doing marketing, communications, social media. I was there for a year and a half, like I said. Then I went to Youngstown for the Phantoms, which is the team in the USHL. So I kind of went backwards. Some people will go from the team level to the league office level. I went from the league office level back to the team level because I wanted to do broadcasting. I wanted to get behind the microphone again. So I went to Youngstown, was there for a year. And then Cincinnati's job opened, and I found out about it through one of my friends and colleagues. And another lesson that a lot of folks will learn is it's not necessarily what you know, it's who you know in this industry. So the broadcaster that I took over for at Bowling Green when he graduated, his name was Bob Mills, and he was at the time, the broadcaster for the Orlando Solar Bears. He knew the outgoing broadcaster here in Cincinnati, called him up and said, "Hey, I got a guy for you." So I sent my resume to him, and he made sure that it got in front of my future boss, our GM, and she gave me a phone call, and we went through the interview process, and you know, a couple of interviews later, that's how I got it. So, you know, it was off of a recommendation through a friend of mine. But I did send in a resume. I sent in a demo tape, sent in some different feature pieces that I do, because, again, it's more than just broadcasting. It's about content. It's about your writing. How well can you write? So I sent writing samples in. I sent in a few YouTube videos and some features that I helped produce when I was at the USHL office. And I think all of that really helped me get the job here in Cincinnati.
So for anyone watching, aspiring to be a broadcaster, just replay everything he said, because that's the process of how you work your way up the ladder. And like I said, it takes more than just wanting it. Sometimes you have to wear so many different hats. So if you think you're stressed out now as a broadcaster, you haven't met my friend Everett. So
well, and networking too. Make sure you network. Make sure you know as many people as you can. And, you know, a lot of folks sometimes are very wary when it comes to reaching out to people. And, you know, I've always said, if people didn't want to be contacted, if people didn't want to help you, they wouldn't have offered their car. They wouldn't have said, "Give me a call." So, you know, if you ever meet a broadcaster, if you ever meet someone who does what you do at a higher level, ask them, you know, "Hey, I'd love to pick your brain. I'd love an opportunity to sit down and talk with you." Some guys I've met, and I still continue to do the same thing. Some guys I've met, you know, are threatened by it. There have been a couple of broadcasters that I've talked to at different levels in the past who aren't about it. But everyone else has been like, "Absolutely, I'd love to listen to your tape. I'd love to talk to you about some things." So, you know, if people weren't sincere about that, they wouldn't offer that to you. So make sure to take that into consideration as well.
And I'm living proof because I just sent him a Twitter message and here we are now. Now he's on my podcast show, a show that I wouldn't have if it wasn't for him. So I appreciate him for that.
Oh, man, that was all you, man. That was all you and your hard work and dedication. So
I appreciate it. All right, last thing I want to talk about. Let's talk about the Seattle Kraken, the 32nd expansion team to the NHL. They will hit the ice in a full calendar year. What can you tell us about Seattle right now? Like, what are you allowed to say?
Well, I can tell you this, man. The Kraken are extremely passionate from the organization, from the city. Everyone involved with that team is just so excited to bring the NHL to Seattle. There have been a couple of failed expansion opportunities and attempts in the past for Seattle. So for them to be able to get this team now after so many years and decades of trying is amazing. Everyone that I've talked to in the front office there that I've worked with, I just had my first day on the job, and everyone is so nice and welcoming and kind. It's been a really, really fun experience. And that's the really cool thing about the organization is I think they're trying to fundamentally change the way that we consume hockey and just the way that you build an organization. Their commitment to diversity, racial diversity, gender diversity is something that, you know, we haven't seen in hockey before. And the NHL has done a really good job over the past couple of years in trying to draw attention to the need for diversity and their initiatives. And obviously, I think that there's still a long way to go. And Seattle is one of those teams who is trying to help carry that baton. And I really think they're putting the NHL on notice. I think what they're doing is saying that you need different voices and different backgrounds and viewpoints in order to have a good, solid organization. So what they're building there is great. I mean, there's so many different plans and things that we've been talking about for content and ways to go about it. They're still building the arena. They're still getting their broadcast deal figured out. And there's a lot of different, you know, maybe wrinkles that they may throw in there. So there's a lot of different things that are going to go into this organization that when we do start playing next year, you know, people are going to really be in awe and amazed just how community focused, how fan focused this team is and the organization is, and then also just all the things they're trying to do in order to change the way that we consume the game.
And you have to keep an ear out for Everett Fitzhugh next year for the Seattle Kraken. Release the Kraken, am I right, Everett?
Release the Kraken. Exactly, man. That's going to be I have to imagine that's going to be the slogan for the first year. Or maybe, I mean, we got a great marketing team, so maybe there's something else out there. But I think release the Kraken is that low-hanging fruit. So it's going to be an amazing year leading into it. And then obviously once we do start playing.
So I would like to thank my guest, Everett Fitzhugh, for appearing on Locked On Devils. He is the new play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Kraken. Keep an ear out for him in one calendar year. And also check out new updates for the Seattle Kraken. And one day, Everett, there will be a Locked On Seattle Kraken podcast in the next few months, hopefully.
Looking forward to it, man. Thank you so much. This is a lot of fun. And, you know, congratulations on all of your success. Keep doing what you're doing. And you and I are going to be in opposing NHL booths one of these days.
I hope so. That's the dream. And, you know, just be trailblazers of the sport and inspiration. So, but, you know, you're the first to do it. And I admire that.
Thanks, man. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
I would like to thank my guest, Everett Fitzhugh, for appearing on the show. And also best of luck to him as he embarks on his journey to Seattle to get ready for the Seattle Kraken, coming to a television and or radio station near you in the up and coming calendar year. So keep an ear out for that. And that's all the time I have for you guys today. So continue to stay safe and have a wonderful day, New Jersey.
That is all for today. Thank you so much to Trey and Everett for having that conversation and for sharing it with us on the Locked On NHL National Show. If you want to make sure you're staying up to date with all things Locked On podcasts, make sure you follow this show on Twitter at Locked On NHL Pods. Not only will you get information on the latest national show broadcasts like this one here, but you also hear about a lot of really cool stuff that is going on with the rest of the network. So Locked On NHL Pods on Twitter. Of course, make sure you're subscribed to this show if you haven't already. Go find that big subscribe button in whatever your favorite podcast podcast app of choice is. Leave a rating or a review if you enjoy what you're hearing on this show. And of course, tell your friends all about it. If you have people in your life who love hockey but aren't listening to this show, do everyone a favor and tell them about it. Make sure they're listening. Send them a link. Send them the Twitter. So that is it for today's episode. We'll see you next time on Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.